Hi, this is Enemy Combatant Radio, and we're bringing you the news show every Monday at 7 p.m. on Pirate Cat Radio in San Francisco, 87.9 FM. And this week is going to be a pretty big week in San Francisco with the UN itself coming to San Francisco for World Environment Day. And we're here on the line with Marie Harrison, who is the Community Outreach Coordinator for Green Action, which is a local environmental group. Welcome, Marie.
Thank you very much.
Could you tell us a little bit about what Green Action is all about, what kind of work you guys do in the community?
Okay, Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice is just what it says. We work on environmental justice issues throughout California in all points, actually, as far away as Alaska and down to how you call it. We've actually been asked to come into communities. One of the good things about Green Action is that we are literally asked or invited into communities to help them organize, do trainings, gather information, and to help them win their environmental justice battles. So we've been in existence for 8 years. This, as a matter of fact, is our eighth year. And still looking forward to eight more.
So now it seems like the biggest issue that you're working on, as far as I can tell, seems to be Pacific Gas and Electric Company and the problems with pollution in certain neighborhoods, at least, of San Francisco. Could you talk about PG&E and the campaign that you guys have been working on?
Yes. Let me first of all... A lot of folks don't realize that San Francisco is only 49 miles square, and Bayview Hunters Point is 3.5 miles of that 49. And in Bayview Hunters Point, there is the Southeast Sewage Treatment Plant, there is the Hunters Point Shipyard, there is, the power plant that is directly across the street from public housing, there is Darling Industries, there is there is Panglow, there is in the southeast sector alone, you will find all of the heavy and light industry. You will find both power plants within walking distance from each other. And in the Bayview Hunters Point in particular, what you will find are the four largest single sources of air pollution in the entire city. And they're all within walking distance, and they're all within Bayview Hunters Point, the community that I live and work in.
So what kind of effects have you seen in the community from this air pollution?
Well, an increasing amount of asthma. It gets worse. So truly, it used to be a very puzzling thing to the community folks, because at one point we were told that it was our genetic structure. Then we were told that we just simply don't take care of ourselves properly. We don't exercise enough. We don't eat properly. It seems like the city, through its health department, had in the earlier days had come up with every excuse but the one common denominator that tied all of us together. And because we live in a poor community, because we live in a community that is predominantly African American, for years these little taunts were put upon us that as if it was something that we were doing wrong. What we discovered was that most of the folks who are the most impacted are the people who live directly across the street from the power plant. The power plant literally sits right in their faces. And I do mean exactly across the street. I don't mean across the street and around the corner. I mean right across the street. And to us, it's a part of bad planning. And what they're doing this week is working on a card that will deal with environmental justice, hopefully, and working on a card to save future generations the torment and the horror that this generation is going through. And at the same time, this city is hosting this, and they're not doing anything, to our view, to shut down the old existing power plants. They keep allowing the date to be shifted. And while saying they want to see it shut down, they realize that this power plant, PG&E has admitted that this power plant is way, way, way past its lifespan and that it's doing most likely more damage than any good. They say that they want to shut this plant down. And while we will admit we know that we have more than one Goliath in our community, one of the things that taunts us the most is that the city will tell us that they want to shut this plant down, yet each year since 1998, they've allowed that closure date to kind of move its own self around further and further out. And in particular, they're now working on placing three brand new CTs. These are combustion turbines that run off of fossil fuel. In the earlier days of these plants, they were talking about siting them at Petrel Hill, where the now existing Petrel Hill power plant, the Merritt plant, sits. And even that was not acceptable to us because, remember, new or no, they're still being added on top of what's already there. And a lot of people don't understand that they're brand new, and yes, they're going to pollute less, but they're going to pollute on top of what's already there and in a community that's already overburdened. So putting them three blocks closer to us, you could move them the three blocks back and put them in Petrel Hill. It wouldn't matter because they're all in the southeast sector. The way the wind patterns blow, we're still going to be getting the bulk of the particulate matter that comes out of those. And I know that the city understands it, yet they're proceeding on with these plans.
So are there any alternatives that Green Action is coming up with that might be feasible for the city?
Oh, most definitely. Listen, and not just Green Action, the mothers group that we work with and the community folks that we work with, these folks are not just saying shut down these plants because they want them shut down and they're doing us harm. They've actually sit down at the table with us. They've gone through the literature. They've gone through the websites of different companies and agencies that do environmentally sane kind of things to help find ways in which to limit the problem. One of the most powerful ways is to increase our solar. We have solar bond money out there right now that this city voted on, overwhelmingly voted on, should I say. And as of yet, and that was back, what, in 2000, somewhere around in there? And that money hasn't been used yet.
Mm-hmm.
Why? We think that solar bond money should be used. We think that the solar should be placed on houses, on shared housing. If you think about it, if you go into public housing and do a whole solar panels there, you've cut off half of the need for PG&E. Okay? If you take, just as they said, that they were going to reduce the need to the drain on PG&E by putting this football field worth of solar panels on top of the Moscone Center, well, that's fine and dandy, but that doesn't help the folks who live in my community who are paying the highest bills. Okay? Things like energy conservation. They're not really pushing energy conservation, and it should be. On any given night, you can go down in Bacadero or in the financial district and find whole buildings lit up to, you would believe that they're conducting all kind of business there, when in fact the business is shut down, but all the lights are on. You can see computer screens still flashing on. Why is it? This is a drain on the energy, on the pool of the energy that is not necessary. There are a lot of little bitty things that could be measured, plus the fact that we know that the technology exists. The city is looking, quote, into more solar, and they have the bond money to support that. They're looking into wave power. Well, it's been proven that it will work. They're looking into more wind power. Well, those kind of things have already proven that they could work. Why are you not stepping up those kind of things versus trying to install more fossil fuel generators? And remember, a fossil fuel generator can do nothing in the end but cause harm because the fossil fuel that it uses is carcinogenic. It's cancer-causing.
So now what about shutting down PG&E completely? Is that something that Green Action is talking about too, because from what I've read, it's basically an illegal situation that we have right now where we don't have public power. We have PG&E illegally privatizing it?
Well, let me tell you something. PG&E has, and the more I think about it, the more I've come to realize, and you have to give credit where credit is due, PG&E has managed to manipulate itself into a win-win situation. Don't think by shutting down the Hunters Point power plant that they would be losing anything, because remember, they want to get into the business of the lines. They want to run all the lines. And in order for you to generate energy and to send it out of the city to where it's needed, you'd have to rent space on their line. So they win. If they keep this plant going, they win, because it's all about the almighty dollar. So I get a little upset when people say, well, PG&E is privatizing, but they're trying to do this and they're doing please believe me, even through their care program that the PUC offers them, gives them a bulk of dollars to help assist poor and low-income housing to keep their utilities on, they're simply paying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're not paying any money out to the families that need it. They're paying themselves to keep the lights on, okay? And people don't understand, and a lot of folks are now starting to realize that the energy that is generated not only through the Hunters Point power plant, but through the Merritt plant as well. All that energy is not being used here, so our lights should not ever go out. That energy is put into a main grid, and the folks at the ISO, the independent systems operators, they decide who gets to use the bulk of the energy, not us. So to think that all of the energy that both of these plants are generating is keeping the lights on in San Francisco is a misconception, and it's a deliberate misconception. The city needs to stop. They need to step up to the plate and put people first, and that's what we're about doing and trying to insist upon and making sure that the city realizes that we're not going to back down on this, and you're not going to bring a whole bunch of folks from all over the world into San Francisco and present San Francisco as the, quote, clean, green city that everyone should model themselves after. You can't do that when you have people here who are dying from the pollution, when you have babies who are constantly and repeatedly being born with asthma, with cancer, with birth defects. They have a very difficult time learning. I think they call it ADA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I got it correct, but at the top of my head. But I know that there's a lot of children in our community that have learning disabilities, and it's directly related to the environment upon which we live. And it's proven by the sheer fact that people who come into our community and live for over 10 years, not African-American families, mind you, but anybody, that Asian population that's moving into Bayview, Hunters Point to live there, that Latin population, even the white population that moves there, what they find out is after 10 years, either themselves or their families, someone in their family, their children, start to exhibit the same types of health defects that our children and our seniors and our young adults are exhibiting. So we can prove to you that, no, it is not a genetic thing. It is in the air, in the land, and in the water. And people still eat, they fish from our bay and they eat from our bay, and you know that you should not, at least as I hope you know that we should not be doing that. The air is extremely polluted, and they would tell you that the air is cleaner there than any place else, and I got to wonder if our air is that clean and our population is that ill, there's something seriously wrong with everybody else.
Are they still going to be building new housing development right on top of the Hunters Point toxic waste site?
Yes, indeed. They're pushing every day to move forward with that. And I find it very distressing that you think about it. They're going to take a parcel of land from the shipyard, and they're going to build all these beautiful, I think the houses are going to start at $700,000 and go up. And then they're going to tell poor folks who live right next door who have lived there for generations on top of generations, clean up your credit and you too can become credit worthy, and you too can become a first time homeowner. This is not a fact of life for these folks right now. Half of those folks are struggling to maintain a job, and those folks who are working barely make $30,000 a year. And then to put these houses right in their faces and then to add insult to injury, you're going to put them there, and you're going to continue to clean the land around it that is toxic, and you expect for new families to move in while you're hauling and digging into stuff that has the potential of killing them. That's wrong. That's morally wrong to bring a brand new person unaware into a community and put them in a brand new house overlooking the bay and paint them this beautiful picture while you're digging up contamination all around them.
I mean, it's just
kind of... Don't wait for that family... I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah, it's just kind of crazy because they've been sitting on that land like for decades just kind of watching it burn and taking measurements here and there, and they're finally going to...
So if you think about it, the worst area on that shipyard is Parcel E, and that's where the fire burns for what? 21 days before even the Navy decided to come and tell the community that it was a possible health hazard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we knew day one when community folks started to see, not just smell, but started to see flames shooting up out of the ground there. The flames were shooting up out of the ground. There were red, yellow, blue, real pretty colors. That in itself is an indicator that there's something toxic down there burning.
Absolutely.
Okay? But for 21 days, not a word, not close your windows, not, not so much as if you're already an asthmatic, perhaps you don't want to come out this day, or you might want to put an air cleaner in your apartment or something, or in your house. Not a word. For 21 days. Because they thought for the whole 21 days, to their view, the wind was blowing in the opposite direction. This is ludicrous, and either they really, I'm not sure that they actually believe this, but I do know that they anticipated that we would believe that, that we were so slow or so ignorant, and yes, we are a community that is ignorant of a lot of facts up until these days here because we started to learn. We started educating ourselves on what is environmentally sane for us, and I don't think that the city actually appreciates the hard work that my community has put in educating itself on a lot of the environmental hazards there because it's our families. We've come to realize that if it's going to be done, we're going to have to do it for ourselves. We cannot depend on the city, our elected officials, our agencies. We can't depend on these guys. These guys turn a deaf ear and a blind eye to all of this stuff. We find ourselves becoming more aware of things that these guys are doing than even they know themselves. We had a meeting with PG&E, and their lawyer didn't even know how old the plant was. Our response was, you should do your homework before you come here. Just do your homework. At least know how old the plant is that you're talking about. Know that the average lifespan for a power plant such as this is 25 years, and now this plant is 76 years old, 77 years old. I mean, we're not talking about a brand new plant that's going to pollute a little bit. We're talking about something that has proven for over a decade that it is going to pollute. It's going to break down. It's going to pollute again. It's been down more than it's been up. And when it's down and you have to force start it to start it up, you push even more contamination into the air. And our air district, that's one of the agencies, in our view, that does very, very little to support us because they don't even monitor the power plant in the way in which they're supposed to. They allow PG&E to monitor themselves and tell them, we were well within limits or we were over just a little bit this day. Come on. Would you put a fox in your hen house and expect for that fox to sit there and go, I only ate 1.5. That's not over your limit, We make fun of it because we have to. In reality, it's a very serious thing. We know that this entire city needs to wake up and join us because none of us are safe. What happens to Baby Hunter's Point is happening to the entire city. People just need to talk to their next-door neighbors. You're going to find that somebody either across the street, around the corner, or next door to you, either they have, their family member has, or someone who lives down the street or on the other side of town that they know has asthma, cancer, bronchitis, diabetes, heart disease. All of these things are caused by the pollution that we're forcing into the air, into the water, and into the land.
So tell folks in San Francisco how they can get involved and participate in what you're doing in the next week.
Okay, and this coming week, from June 1 through June 5, we have planned a whole week of events. Starting tomorrow, there's going to be a drop. There are going to be welcoming signs for hopefully drops in various locations that will be very, very warm and very welcome, and it will expose San Francisco's dirty little secret. That's the Hunters Point Power Plant.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be introducing our clotheslines. That's clotheslines that the mothers will be putting together of their baby clothes with very poignant messages attached to them. Hopefully we're going to have those out, not just in one area for the demonstration, but we're going to have them all over the city. Every place that these mayors go to, they're going to know that our children are not to be forgotten. The city cannot set us away or hide us away. We are here, and we want to be seen, and we want to be heard. We are going to have a tour of Bayview Hunters Point, a toxic tour. It's called Our Reality Tour on the 3rd. On the 4th, we're going to have a major rally that's being supported and sponsored by over 53, 54, maybe, you know, over 50 agencies and environmental agencies and groups and individuals that have come together. They're bringing folks together, all of these organizations from communities from all around the state are coming to San Francisco to support us in this rally to make sure that San Francisco understands that we will not be hidden. We will not keep the secret. We want everybody in the world to know that we have not been doing proper urban planning, and this is what this whole week of events are supposed to be, and we want to be part of that planning. We want everybody to know that we've been up, we've been thinking, we've been working on it, and we have some good ideas of our own on how to do real urban planning, real energy conservancy. We have been doing our homework, and we want everybody to know that.
Okay.
Anybody who's interested in joining us can contact myself or Jessica Tovar at 415-248-5010, or you can email myself or Jessica, would be Marie at Green Action or Jessica at greenaction.org. Green Action, one word.
And can you tell us, again, what are the details for the rally on Saturday?
The rally, simply show up by 11 o'clock. We will all be there on the southeast corner. Hopefully, we'll be able to take over the stairs. We've been told that that may not be possible. We're still working on that notion of taking up the stairs because we want to be up front with what we're doing. We're not trying to hide, and we're not trying to sneak. We're not trying to publicly embarrass the city. We're trying to publicly make the city aware that we know that they're trying to hide.
Okay, and your website is greenaction.org, is that right?
Yes. You can go to our website at www.greenaction.org.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us. We have to let you go because we have other guests already calling in right now. But thank you.
Oh, great.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll talk to you again during the week.
Oh, please. I'll be looking forward to it.
Okay.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, so we're going to be coming up in a few minutes with some more guests to talk about the UN World Environment Day, which is coming to San Francisco for the next week. There's going to be a lot of events going on. We have some coverage already on indiebay.org. You can find a calendar there with most of the events listed. Also, you can check out greenaction.org. Be back in a few minutes.
Salgo a encontrarte a medio camino. Y después 7 años de exilio, por haberte tanto se llena de barcos de guerra y una lluvia fina de cenizas cae. Salgo a encontrarte mi traje de ti. Años de exilio por haberte tanto.
All right, we're back. This is Enemy Combatant Radio in San Francisco, and we're on Pirate Cat 87.9 FM every Monday from 7 to 8 p.m. with news headlines from indie media. And also, you can check us out at enemycombatantradio.net. Today, we're talking about the United Nations World Environment Day, which is coming to San Francisco this week. And joining us on the phone right now is Ali Starr, who works with the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, and also she was one of the founders of Art and Revolution, and she's coordinating some of the events happening in San Francisco this week. So welcome, Ali.
Thank you for having us.
So could you tell us a little bit about why is the United Nations coming to San Francisco this week?
What we caught wind of about the United Nations coming to San Francisco is that they in addition to celebrating their 60th year anniversary, and they were born in San Francisco, is their annual, in fact, 35th World Environment Day, which has always been held in the Global South and other countries and has never been held in North America before. And the sense that we had is it's somewhat of a slap for George Bush that they are coming to North America and San Francisco specifically, and it seemed like an opportunity for folks at the Ella Baker Center to participate and to make sure that communities of color, working class folks, and people who often don't get on the mic at these kinds of national, international events, that their issues be highlighted and that we really take the bull by the horns and make something happen that would be worthwhile given this opportunity.
So now, what is the goal of the United Nations this week? Are they just is there any like momentous, international treaty that's going to be signed?
They are signing a bunch of accords, and Ella Baker Center had some role in making sure that there were also statements and accords being signed that included the concerns around environmental justice, environmental racism, and some of those issues. Their theme is green cities, and I've heard some people say, how are you going to talk about green cities without making sure the brown folks get on the mic and have a part of that? And so we're doing a series of events in conjunction, and I can I'll list those out because I think a lot of them are going to be really interesting and provocative. We're doing something on Wednesday, June 1st at 7 p.m. It's called Green Cities, Brown Folks, Responsible and Just Urban Environments. It takes place at the Commonwealth Club at 595 Market Street, and it's sponsored by several different community groups, including EBC, the Asian Pacific Environmental Network, Indigenous Environmental Network, Urban Habitat, and also the West Harlem Environmental Action, and there'll be local and national speakers there. And that's in conjunction with an event called Emancipating Imagination, which is a prisoner art exhibit, and that will be taking place there. We've been flying in pieces of art, beautiful pieces from prisoners, and it's really important for us to celebrate culture as well in the context of these accords and this UN gathering. And then we're also doing several events throughout the week. Thursday, we're supporting an event called Celebrating Water Democracy, Promoting the Global Treaty on the Right to Water. And that one's taking place at the Metreon, of all places, on the fourth floor. And a whole bunch of different groups are involved in that event as well. At 5 o'clock, we're doing an event called Green Jobs and Urban Economies, and we've invited a lot of business owners that are working in communities of color, working-class communities, and trying to provide green jobs for people who have previously been incarcerated or don't have an opportunity to work at all. And we're, the concept for Ella Baker Center is to really try to link the concept of green jobs, not jails. And then after that, from 7 to 10, there's an event called the Greenhouse Jam. It's a reception with food and performances. And Diane Patterson, a lot of people know from our forest movements and environmental movements, we believe will be singing, and poets from Youth Speaks and Ann Jones from our organization will be speaking. And then Friday, June 3rd, we have an event at 1 to 4:30 called Bridging Social Justice and the Environment Community Conversations, and that is taking place in Hunters Point. And a whole slew of community organizations are taking part in that, and Dan Jones will be present at that, and Julia Butterfly and a sister named Lena Miller, who works on organic urban gardens in the Bayview, and a whole bunch of other community leaders, youth and elders. And on Saturday, we have an event at 2:30 called Social Equity in the Environment, Eco-Equity or Eco-Apartheid, and that is taking place at the Metreon on the second floor. And that evening, we have an event at 7:30 at night called Voices Rising, and it's an evening of music, art, dance, and poetry for social and environmental justice. It's taking place at a brand-new nightclub that was built with recycled materials, primarily called the Blue Cube. It's at 34 Mason Street at Market, and it's just one block west of the Powell Street BART, really easy to get to. And it's sponsored by KPFA and Hard Knock Radio and Art in Action Leadership Program, Youth Speaks, People's Grocery, the League of Pissed Off Voters, and a whole bunch of other groups. And it's featuring poet laureate of San Francisco, Devorah Major, who's amazing, slam-winning poets Aya De Leon and Sheldra Patel, Brava Center for the Arts Hip-Hop Theater Troupe, Colored Ink, Oakland's premier urban hip-hop dance companies, Destiny and Dream, Rashidi Omari from Company Profits, Amy Susara, and other poets from Youth Speaks, and live bands Dialectic and Soulography. We also understand that Guapale may come through that night, and we also have Radioactive, who's a beatbox poet a lot of people know from seeing Michael Frenti, and a whole bunch of other artists. Loco Bloco is to be confirmed right now as well, and it's a sliding scale, but we will not turn away any activists. It starts at 10 to 25, but no one turned away for lack of funds. And if people want to volunteer, I'll leave that website, which is that would be our website. I'll give that as well, ellabakercenter.org. But it's volunteerworldevent@yahoo.com. And for more information, people can call 510-428-3939, extension 227. There are also rallies and press conferences on both Saturday and Sunday. The Sunday event is called People's Spotlight on Oil and Environmental Justice. This is June 5th, From the Cradle to the Grave, and it's at Civic Center Plaza, and sponsored by Communities for Better Environment, Amazon Watch, EBC, Rainforest Action Network, Urban Habitat, West County Toxics Coalition, Native Movement, and many others. And that one is going to specifically be looking at oil abuse and taking a look at Chevron in particular. So we hope people will come out to that. And for more information on that, you can email joshua@ellabakercenter.org. That's a little bit about what we're up to.
Wow, that's a lot. That's huge.
Yeah, it's been a busy month.
So has there been anything like this? Is this the first World Environment Day event, or is this the latest in a series?
This is pretty unique. This, as I said, this is the first time the UN has done its World Environment Day in North America. So it really is a unique event, and could certainly have gone more of the mainstream route, and Ella Baker Center and a lot of the community organization partners that we've been working with wanted to make sure that it didn't end up being kind of a mainstream event where the mayor sat together and just talked amongst each other but didn't learn anything new. And I think this is really an opportunity for communities who have been doing the work, who've been in the streets, who have been dealing with the worst impacts of environmental racism and toxicity in their neighborhoods, and the people who have been the most victorious and come up with some really powerful models for social change, that they be highlighted and represented and prioritized. So I think it's a real opportunity, and I'm hoping that our allies and communities will really support some of these events and come out and show that they're down with some of the work that we're doing.
Okay, well, we're joined here in the studio by Azubuike Akiba, who is going to talk to us a little bit more about some of the issues. But thanks so much for joining us, Ali.
Thank you so much, and thanks for getting out the word. We really appreciate it and the work that you guys do.
Yeah, and so hopefully we can talk to you guys again throughout the week and get some updates.
We look forward to
it. Post a lot of coverage on Indie Media.
Yeah, thank you to Indie Media and the work that you guys do. It's incredible.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so in the studio here is Azubuike Akiba. Do I have it right?
Yeah, you got it right.
Awesome. So could you tell us a little bit about the work that you do in the community?
I kind of work like a technical advisor or doing environmental science, supporting local campaigns. And I guess tying it in with the World Environment Day is that the Port of Oakland is the bridge between, like, overseas, like, the idea of globalization. It comes to fruition when you look at the impacts of ports on low-income communities all along the coast, particularly West Oakland, down in Long Beach, L.A. So we're looking at the pollution from the ships, pollution from the trucks, looking at the air quality and the indoor air quality, because the low-income homes are not airtight. So therefore, communities are getting engaged in the process with the regional air quality management to do some intervention to figure out and measure what kind of air pollution they're being exposed to, looking at and connecting it with the environmental health issues like the asthma, heart disease that increases with particulates and stuff like that.
So what is unique about where you do your work, like in West Oakland, is that an especially polluted area?
Yeah, I think what is unique about it is more about how the community engages in the process. I think that's what makes the difference, is on all levels with the Port of Oakland, the City of Oakland, the regulators, they all come and the community actually engages them in public policy. So normally or historically, communities have been the last ones, especially low-income communities, have been the last ones to be involved in any kind of discussions. And West Oakland in particular, they've stepped up to the plate to participate in the public policy. And yes, it is, in fact, impacted very seriously with the pollution from the port, which is like the big elephant in the room, and they're surrounded by three freeways, the 880, the 980, and the 580. So that's kind of like a virtual noose around the community's neck.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of trucks coming through, approximately 10,000 trucks a day coming through their neighborhood. And not only just the physical threat of the huge trucks coming through the neighborhood, which wouldn't be allowed like over in Berkeley or something. They just do not allow the tractor trailers to come through their neighborhood. But it seems like it's okay to come through this low-income neighborhood, even if they're lost or getting taken shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to engage the city at a certain level to say, look, we need you all to participate in enforcement to make sure that the roads that are designated for the trucks do not come through that neighborhood. So those are some of the issues that people encounter. And also the post office, the depot. I noticed, just like in San Francisco and in Oakland, that the major depots for the city are also located in a poor neighborhood. So, and the post office is diesel trucks. So that's a huge input from the government agency. Although everybody benefits from the mail, everybody benefits from the ports, but everybody doesn't share in the burden of the impacts, the adverse impacts that these facilities bear.
Yeah. So what do you think about the state of environmental justice in the world today? Is it something that there's, like, improving consciousness about, or is there still a lot of work to be done?
Yeah, there is definitely milestones that have been reached. I mean, there's a certain level of maturity that environmental justice has developed out of kind of like the environmental movement, and at the same time bridging the social, civil rights, and human rights issues together. Native Americans are taking a lead. Different communities, the Asian and Latino and African American communities, are all bringing their issues to the table. And I think that right there is a shift in terms of traditionally environmental groups have been considered predominantly white and kind of upper middle class and only concerned about, you know, the forest and the sea, the animals and things like that. And all communities are concerned about that, but we're also concerned about the endangered quality of life that low-income people are encountering as a result of urbanization and dense populations being put in these areas.
So in your work, do you spend most of your time, like, doing, like, you know, field measurements and technical work? Or are you working with people, or what do you do?
Yeah, it's a kind of combination. I mean, I was trained as a scientist to do actual the field measuring, like measuring soil samples, air samples. And I do bring that to the experience when I'm working with community groups, but I have a background in doing organizing. So any kind of movement building or campaigns have to be done not primarily based on legal or scientific evidence, but based on the empowerment of the communities being able to take that information and use it to forward their campaigns. So I kind of present like a unique opportunity to bridge some of the technical and scientific resources to the community's organizing agenda.
So which events coming up this week are you going to be involved with?
Well, I'm going to be involved with a couple of events, but like Allie was talking about, the Green Cities Brown Folks, I think people are well aware that the urban cities are slowly changing their complexion and in large populations of, you know, approximately 50% of some of the major cities are being Latinos and African Americans and Asian communities are the influx is increasing. So what we're saying is that pay attention, that if you want to talk about green cities or green jobs or environmental technology, then we want communities that don't have jobs. We want those kind of people to get the skill levels so that they can engage in that process. And we want green cities like anybody else. We want solar panels for people who don't own their property. We want, you know, energy efficient facilities in our homes, like better, you know, refrigerators and stuff like that. But all, more importantly, the issues around air quality, water quality. The brown folks, so to speak, are being represented by some brilliant organizers and professors like Raquel Penderhughes. She's coming from San Francisco State. Carla Perez, she's from Communities for a Better Environment, and Joshua Abrams from the Ella Baker Center. So those kind of people are bringing the technical skills, the commitment to moving the communities and moving the discussion to pay attention and say that we have qualified people to talk about these issues. And we want the mayors from other countries to understand in an international context that we want them to pay attention to the accords where we're talking about transportation, urban design, urban planning, environmental health from the perspective of the normally disenfranchised communities. not just for economic vitality for the cities. We want them to consider also the quality of life for those people as well.
And if folks are listening from San Francisco, how can they get information about getting involved this week?
Oh, yeah. They could call, I think, Joshua Abrams, which is...
I think we already got his email earlier on the show.
Yeah, he's going to be the main coordinator. I'm just one of the panelists going to be talking about transportation and environmental health. So the Ella Baker Center is the key contact for coordinating that particular event. And also, I'm going to be working with the NRDC, National Resource Defense Council, to talk about some of the issues around the Port of Oakland and bringing, again, highlighting the point about globalization and environmental justice, the connection.
And your group is the West Oakland, what is it?
It's called the West Oakland Coalition for Revitalization, but the main project is called Environmental Indicators Project. So they could contact me or the organization at www.neip.org. And there's also at that website a lot of information about the environmental indicators.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us today. We've got to get to our news headlines for the last few minutes. But we'll be covering it all week, so stay tuned to Enemy Combatant Radio and indiebay.org.
Ich bin ein Teil von dir. Weißt du jetzt, dass du frei bist? Weißt du jetzt, wer du bist? Weißt du jetzt, was du tun willst? Ich bin nicht unter dir, ich bin nicht über dir, ich bin neben dir.
This is Halima, and I am here with your headlines for Monday, this Memorial Day in San Francisco. And oddly enough, during these this upcoming week of these activities for the UN Environmental Conference here in San Francisco, animal rights activists are beginning their trial. The Shack 7 animal rights activists were indicted in March 2004 under controversial Federal Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, and on Wednesday the 1st, they will begin their trial. This act punishes anyone who physically disrupts an animal enterprise. The charges stem from these activists' alleged participation in an international campaign to close the notorious testing lab, Huntington Life Science. The Shack 7 could face up to 23 years in prison each and fines over $1 million, and that is per person. And so the indictment and the trial of these environmental activists is also part of the Bush administration's campaign on the war on terror. And also last week, and again, this is before another environmental, this whole big UN environmental shindig here in San Francisco, nine local activists have also been subpoenaed in the last week to appear before a federal grand jury in San Francisco. And federal agents have been increasingly targeting animal rights activists. 7-year fugitive Peter Young was arrested in San Jose. Also, activists have been followed, detained. Two homes have been raided, and a new bulletin for a wanted suspect has been posted. And these grand jury trials have been increasingly used to intimidate and harass activists as well as environmental activists. And staying on that whole environmental thing, a Brazilian judge has reinstated an order banning logging from the inhabited lands near inhabited by a remote Amazon tribe. And that ruling covers over 410,000 acres and the rainforest, and that's northeast of Rio Pardo. And the campaigners warned that the group of Indians face extinction if nothing was done to protect them. Indian rights groups are also now urging the government to enforce the ruling, fearing a violent backlash by loggers. And ironically, earlier this month, the Brazilian government announced that one-fifth of the entire Amazon has now been cleared by deforestation. And by destroying the forest, we are actually accelerating global warming and disrupting the world's climate. But to show you, our listeners, how much the Bush administration is paying attention to this, apparently Star Wars is now back, but I'm not talking about the movie. President Bush is likely to back weapons in space, and an arm race is feared by the UN over things like Death Stars and Rods from God. And apparently the president is expected to issue a directive giving the U.S. Air Force a green light for developing space weapons, potentially triggering a new global arms race. Space superiority is not our birthright, but our destiny. So space superiority is our day-to-day mission. Space superiority is our vision for the future. And that is a quote from General Lance Lord, head of the U.S. Air Force Space Command. And that was an article actually published in the New York Times May the 18th about Air Force seeking Bush approvals for space weapons program. So we kind of see where the priorities of the Bush administration really are. So I don't know what's going on with that. And I don't know if you want to go into any announcements about events coming up in San Francisco.
I can
go for some more headlines or not.
Whatever you want to do. We have like 5 minutes.
I have 5 minutes. Oh, my goodness. So I can give you a little international news that unfortunately this weekend in Haiti, the State Department issued a new travel warning for the country because of the volatile security situation and the absence of an effective police force. And as of May 27th, the U.S. Embassy has evacuated all non-emergency personnel and their families. And they've advised all Americans to evacuate if they can do so safely. And apparently earlier this month, Human Rights Watch put out a report sort of talking about daily acts of violence in Port-au-Prince, and they also urged the U.N. to renew its mandate and uphold human rights, which is obvious. And there are also calls for investigating the Haitian police for apparently who are accused of human rights abuses. But those calls for investigations are nothing new. So, and earlier this month, Haitian police attacked unarmed demonstrators coming back from a demonstration. And unfortunately, people were killed. Apparently, they shot a young man named Sanel Joseph for no apparent reason. And there were no UN or security forces present to monitor the police that opened fire. So that is most unfortunate about what's going on in Haiti right now. And if you wanted more information about Haiti, you can go to HaitianActionNetwork.net and go to their website. But on a little bit more happier of a note, in Procida Park this weekend, there's going to be a celebration of garden butterflies. And you may think that that's really strange, but we're talking about the environment. There are some weeds here in San Francisco that people like to pull up and get rid of. Those weeds are actually bringing butterflies who pollinate other plants and help things to grow here in this our city. So they're having a celebration of that and an acknowledgement of that in Procida Park on June 3rd at Harrison and Procida.
Are they going to have any of those mission blue butterflies? I've never seen those.
Maybe. I don't know. Well, you know, maybe some butterflies will show up. But there will be people. There's going to be a rock band, wine, food, kids art, all kinds of fun stuff. So if you're able to get there between 5 and 8, at Harrison and Procida, you can check out some artwork about butterflies and environmental stuff. So if you want to go into any more announcements or anything like that.
Okay. So one story. Okay, well, actually, about the animal rights thing. So, according to the FBI, oh, this mic won't reach. there's been an escalation in violent rhetoric and tactics. Attacks are growing in frequency and size. And the senator who is heading up the committee, which is investigating all this eco-terrorism, is saying that they're going to be investigating the funding sources for these nefarious terrorists, as well as the membership and the media. So kind of a threat. So we won't talk any more about that here on Enemy Combatant Radio because we're scared of the senator.
That's very strange. But I'm not really sure what, you know, they're doing about the threats to the environment. But, you know, apparently that's sort of going to help along with the Star Wars thing, but and not the movie. But if you're also interested in any other sort of environmental things, CascadiaRising.org has information about what's going on up in Siskiyou. And right now in Oregon, they are logging a lot of Oregon's forests, shockingly enough. And if you're interested in finding out more about what's going on up in Oregon and how they're logging, and the Biscuit Fire, which is also a big part of what happened in Oregon last summer, you can go to CascadianRising.org to find out more about that if you're interested in continuing on with this activism stuff after these weird things put out by the FBI.
Okay, we're out of time. Bye.
Bye.